It is Wrestling Nostalgia Night, and tonight we are taking a look at one of the best told stories WWE has ever produced in their history, and that is The Undertaker versus Kane at WrestleMania 14. I can't wait to get into this one, so let's not waste any time and get started right now.
It's time for your weekly fix of wrestling nostalgia when we look at wrestling's past eras from the Attitude Era. To the reality era.
I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead, but the fact is, it's going to get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
To today. Here on the WWE Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to the WWE Podcast right here on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're getting your podcast. Well, that's where you're listening. Thank you so much for joining me. And it's that fun night of the week, right? Fun night of the week for wrestling fans, because we get to just disconnect ourselves from the current product, your frustrations from that current product, and dive into the time machine, the DeLorean. We got our flux capacitor going. We're ready to roll. Heading back to the year of 1998 at WrestleMania 14 that took place in Boston, Massachusetts. If you recall, the biggest moment from that pay-per-view was Stone Cold Steve Austin winning the WWF Championship at the time from Shawn Michaels. Certainly worthy of being the top story coming out of that pay-per-view, given that would be their biggest superstar of all time. But I also think that the match between Undertaker and Kane, while celebrated and talked about, is one that is not discussed enough and really understanding, especially when you look at today's storytelling, the differences of what a masterpiece story is, which is not easy to achieve and is extremely rare, and really any form of entertainment, wrestling, books, TV shows, movies. A masterpiece comes along once every 15, 20 years. I mean, it's just not that common. And this was one of those masterpiece stories. So we are going to get into all of that. And obviously, here's some audio that I can't wait to play for you. I get goosebumps with some of these clips. So we're going to get to listen to them together. It's going to be a lot of fun. And that's what we're here for in this just absolute insanity of 2020 that just keeps on giving, doesn't it? 2020 just is one of the most bizarre, just turbulent years ever. I mean, I'm 35 years old, so I don't have a huge sample size to pull from, right? I mean, and you don't really remember the first, what, like 5-10 years of your life? Like, you have flashes. So I'm really evaluating the last 25 years. So from like 10 years old on is when you kind of really understand what's going on, right? And I have never seen this in my life. Many people who are much older than me have said the same thing. And it's just the most crazy thing I've ever seen ever. And so we'll take you away from all the presidential election stress and hit you some with some wrestling. That's why you're here. If you're interested in hearing about more about the presidential election, well, you would have just tuned into Fox, CNN, MSNBC, ABC, whatever the hell else is on. Right now, you are here to talk wrestling and listen to wrestling. So that's what we're going to do. And just so you know, too, my mailbag show that I promised I would deliver is dropping tomorrow. I'll actually be recording it tonight. Not that that matters to you, but I'll be recording it tonight and dropping it tomorrow, sometime tomorrow. Got a lot of voicemails, and I'm going to make it its own separate show this week. And again, I may not do that every week, depending on how many voicemails I get. It does vary from time to time, but it's just overwhelming, and I want to make sure that it's not taking up too much time in my shows that I should be talking about other stuff. So I'm dedicating an entire show tomorrow, as I'm going to call it. I mean, this isn't super creative, but I don't really possess that part of my brain anyway. Whatever, was that the right side or left side that's really creative? See, I guess I prove my point, right? I don't even know. I'm not even creative enough to know which side of my brain is the creative part. So I guess that's pretty much proves my point, right? So So that'll be coming tomorrow, as well as the NXT review coming tomorrow with Zach. And then we have Friday with Rivalries with Anthony DeMarco, who, again, if you didn't hear last week's, it was on the career of Kurt Angle. Check it out. It was really, really well done. I don't know if I could have done a better job, honestly, on Kurt Angle, which is a guy that is also, I think, not talked about enough, and did also a great job on the analysis and bringing his whole career full circle. So check it out on our feed, which was just what, 5-6 days ago now. And then again on Saturday, if you didn't hear my show last night, we have a brand new co-host who is joining us, and he will be doing New Japan Pro Wrestling. His name is Zach Downing. So you'll be able to hear him this coming Saturday covering New Japan Pro Wrestling. Again, it may not be a product that you watch right now, but maybe you like to still hear about wrestling talk. I mean, I kind of did the same thing. Yes, this is the WWE podcast, but I am a fan of all wrestling promotions because I want to see the genre of pro wrestling succeed. And it's also still fun to hear about other promotions through somebody else's lens. Even if you don't know a whole lot about it, you don't know the names, you don't understand the stories that are going on, the matches, it's still a fun listen because you're a wrestling fan. And even if it's a different promotion, you get the psychology of wrestling. You know what brought you into wrestling. And hey, maybe you'll even become a fan of New Japan. So that's going to be coming up this Saturday. And then Sunday, Michael Gross will be joining me for your week in review. So a full jam-packed schedule to close out the week. And in a week that I think we all will need some kind of therapeutic, and I hope I can be one of those remedies, unless you're in New Jersey, in which case you also have a secondary remedy for those that know what I'm talking about there. But regardless, again, which aisle, side of the aisle you fall on, everybody seems to be stressed out because of the delay in the results and potential voter fraud, all this stuff, right? You don't need me to cover it. You know what's going on. But let's be the anti that. I guess I'm not, considering I just talked about it, but from here on out, from this moment, we are the anti-CNN, anti-Fox, anti-MSNBC. So let's roll here. Okay, those of you that are wrestling fans from the 90s, I'm assuming that it's probably a 50-50 split of my listeners based on the demographic information I receive from downloads and things. You know, and you remember this matchup. But maybe you don't remember it in this way. Maybe you've forgotten how important this match was. The chills you felt in the storytelling. And there's really no better way to tell a story than when you have characters that are deep, that are all in, that you have a beginning, middle, and end for, and they execute it to perfection. That's what this story was in a nutshell, in a very simplistic nutshell. That's what this story between Undertaker and Kane was. I want to be clear, though. We're talking about the WrestleMania 14 semi-main event between Undertaker and Kane, right? Like the build-up to that match and the match itself. So anything else? I know they had a match at WrestleMania 20. I was there for it. When The Undertaker went back from the American Badass to the Dead Man. I remember that very, very well. That is something that I remember and I'll treasure forever. It was just a great moment to see the Dead Man back after a few years of the American Badass character. And I know that they had a couple of matches as well, not at WrestleMania, but fighting over the World Championship. They had obviously a run as the Brothers of Destruction, all that kind of thing. But I also want to keep in line with WWE's 30 Days of the Dead Man. Or 30 Days of the Undertaker, whatever they're calling it. Because, let's face it, Survivor Series this year is the 30th year anniversary of the Undertaker's debut. It's unbelievable that it's been 30 freaking years. So, with all that said, let's start at the beginning. How did this match even come about? How did this start? Again, if you know the story, you know where I'm going. But maybe you've forgotten, or you're new, and that's great. So let's follow along. Let's have a little story time, folks. All right. Sit back, relax, grab your milk and your cookies and gather around the fire. Right. Let's have a little bit of alone time. All right. It's just getting creepy. Okay. So it started all in October of 1997. This is actually a time that is very near and dear to my heart that I talk about a lot, and I've done actually a couple of shows on this match because it is so special to me. Undertaker, HBK, Hell in a Cell, the very first one. You talk about a five-star classic. This was a five-star classic, and I talk about it all the time. I'm trying to resist talking about it now. But that's where this story started between Undertaker and between Kane. So I'm going to set the stage. Undertaker and Michaels had a few matches. I believe it was at Ground Zero that they had a lumberjack match. They had a straight-up wrestling match. Michaels was able to escape, and I think he got disqualified. The second match was at a pay-per-view called Ground Zero, which was in September of 97, where it was a lumberjack match, and it was supposed to be a way for Michaels to he's not able to escape with lumberjacks around the ring. And Undertaker ended up basically taking out the lumberjacks. Michaels still ends up fairly unscathed in that Ground Zero pay-per-view. What a great name for a pay-per-view, by the way. I know Ground Zero is a much different term now with 9/11. But, that's a badass pay-per-view name. I don't know why. I love it. And then they meet at Hell in a Cell. This is where the Hell in a Cell structure was thought up. This is the ultimate you can't escape match. And they did, but it was great psychology and, to me, the best way you could use the cell ever. Now, for weeks prior to this, while Undertaker and Michaels were in a program, Paul Bearer was screaming to the Undertaker that his brother Kane is still alive and he's coming, which actually seemed to bothered the dead man a little bit. And we, as fans, never heard the name Kane, didn't know what he looked like, who he was, other than he's the Undertaker's brother, and that the Undertaker burned down a funeral home and Kane was inside, and Kane somehow managed to escape with just some scars on his face, which we obviously turned out to be not true. And then they tried to cover it by saying they were emotional scars, the kind of scars you can't see, which, you know, whatever, fine. And this was the premise for going into the Hell in a Cell with Michaels. Now, again, in one of the best matches you'll ever see, very subjective, of course, with The Undertaker and Michaels at Hell in a Cell, Bad Blood 97. Kane debuts here. And let's take a listen, because it's classic footage, right? Like, I got to put this on here. I know that you're dying for a little bit of audio. I said footage, but I meant audio. And let's listen to Kane's debut and exactly what he does.
Undertaker! Tombstone!
Undertaker!
Set up for the tombstone! Undertaker set up for the tomb, driven down to the canvas.
All right, so that's how Kane debuted. Coming in, I know that was a little long, but I get lost in myself sometimes. That was Kane's debut. Coming in, tombstoning The Undertaker. Great job, you know, McMahon on commentary. Sometimes he was a little hokey. Sometimes a little over the top and cheesy. But McMahon on commentary is actually not bad. I mean, I do remember him on commentary several times, and before he became the Mr. McMahon character, he was on commentary with Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler. And they made a good team. They did. Vince was good on commentary. And obviously, with the stories he knew he was going to have to tell, he knew how he wanted to tell them, and it was always just directly from the horse's mouth of exactly the narrative he wanted, rather than screaming in people's ears and headsets of what they want and should say. But nonetheless, that's how Kane debuted, and tombstones Undertaker. And from here on out, Undertaker refuses to fight Kane. And this is where it gets deep, and it actually makes you feel something. Undertaker, since Kane is his own flesh and blood, for weeks does not defend himself against Kane. And you're thinking to yourself, I actually kind of get it. Right? Like, you are emotionally struggling with Kane being the one who, you know, he's attacking his brother, but also sympathetic for The Undertaker, because do you really want to pummel your own flesh and blood? Because you still care for this person, but they're still, you know, they're physically assaulting you. What do you do? And I even remember a moment after a couple of weeks or a couple of times that Undertaker had been assaulted. He finally blocks one of the punches by Kane, and the crowd erupted, thinking, oh, Undertaker's finally going to destroy Kane here. And it didn't happen. He ended up letting Kane just beat him down again. And here's where it gets even better. We have Kane then fake an alliance with The Undertaker in one of the most, just, I don't know how to, I can't believe I'm saying this phrase when it comes to Undertaker and Kane in their characters, heartfelt moments. One of the more heartfelt moments, and it was just perfectly executed, and the narrative from Jim Ross on this was just completely spot on. So again, I'm going to play that clip, but I want to give you the time frame here. We move from October 97. Now we've fast forwarded a little bit to January of 98. So a few months later, we have Undertaker after being beat down by Kane for many weeks. Again, this didn't happen every week, but he still didn't defend himself against Kane. Undertaker is still in a program with Shawn Michaels, who now has DX very involved, you know, as they have been for the entire rivalry, but really making it a numbers game against The Undertaker here. And let's take a listen to what happens.
He's giving The Undertaker a taste of what's going to happen this Sunday at the Royal Rumble. He's blasting. Look at this, JR.
It's the highly strong versus the highly motivated. Oh, oh, oh my. Don't tell me.
Dismantle
Generation X laid waste to The Undertaker until the Taker's brother, Kane. I'll guarantee you one thing. We're going to have a new WWF champion at WrestleMania. Kane will be there. You've got to believe he'll negate Michaels in China. And then it'll be one-on-one, and when that happens, The Undertaker will be the new champion. And all that. Kane apparently is extending his hand in some sort of bond or friendship to his older brother, and Undertaker is returning it. What a moment. What a moment in the World Wrestling Federation. And finally, The Undertaker seemingly had a smile on his face.
Oh, I, if you guys could see me right now, like I literally have goosebumps. I know that audio sometimes doesn't do it justice. I would recommend that you check this clip out. It's on YouTube. That's where I pulled it from. It's called Kane Saves the Undertaker from DX Attacks, 1/12/1998. So, look at it for yourself, but, it ends up being a very, just a powerful moment. That moment, the specific one I'm talking about, yeah, Undertaker, gets saved by Kane, which all actually ended up all being a ruse. I'll get to that in a minute. But the moment when Kane extends his hand and the Undertaker returns it and then the pyro goes off, it's, they're like 60 feet apart, but somehow it's like they're embraced. It's, maybe I'm the only one that feels that way about that moment. It literally gave me chills as I was playing it, watching it. I really would recommend you do. And so that's really, we're kind of halfway to the story here. We're kind of halfway to the setup of the match. And now we get to the Royal Rumble itself, where things take a dark turn for The Undertaker, because Undertaker and Michaels were in a casket match in that, for the WWF Championship. And at that time, Michaels was not injured. And this match injured him to the point of almost not being able to make it to the main event of WrestleMania 14 with Austin in Boston. So what happened was Michaels was backdropped by The Undertaker on the casket, and it hit his lower back just right and, I guess, broke his back. It was somewhat low on the back, but it was like the edge of the casket when you're going full speed, being back body dropped outside the ring. It just hit perfectly. It was a bad fall, and it looked awful. So Michaels actually got injured from all this, but Kane ends up, well, I guess let's take a little bit of a listen to what Kane does. So I'll kind of pause it there because it takes a while to get to the next step. And Kane ends up assaulting Taker after he saves him from Michaels and several other wrestlers that were just pounding on Taker. It was like seven or eight of them. So Kane comes out to help him temporarily, only to turn on him himself. And he did his pyro, although it didn't go off in the middle of the ring. It's just kind of awkward. But he ends up throwing Taker into the casket. And, well, he ends up lighting it on fire, and Undertaker is inside, although Kane is the one who's smashing an axe into the casket. I never understood that. I've seen that happen before. Maybe that's just for ventilation or safety reasons, but there's no real physical harm that could come of an axe going through a casket. If you're laying there, you're really just attacking the casket. But I guess the visual of it is is what you're after, not necessarily the practicality of it. So Kane lights it on fire, and we don't see Taker for a long time here. This is the Royal Rumble time, and now we have to wait. We have to wait until we get the return of the Dead Man. And when he returns, it's a big deal, a great promo. Yeah, well, just take a listen.
Together at the Royal Rumble. Did you think that could destroy me? Don't you know that you cannot destroy that that does not wish to perish? And you, Paul, the audacity to come out here week after week.
Look at his face.
And claim responsibility for my disappearance. Yeah. The fact of the matter is, on those times, while I return to the world of darkness, it's of my own accord. It's a time for spiritual healing. It's a time for the truth. And I know the truth. And this trip, what I was doing was soothing the souls of my parents, because I had to explain to them why I would have to do the one thing I promised never to do. Understand why I am the most feared entity in the World Wrestling Federation. You will understand why I am the Reaper of Wayward Souls. And you will understand why I am the Lord of Darkness.
All right, so I'm gonna stop it there. There's a little bit more there, but basically he's saying he's gonna do the one thing he promised never to do, and that is that is attack assault his brother or physically attack his brother, and he has to return. He returned to the World of Darkness. He had to go and explain to his parents. I mean, they're dead, but that he needs to do the one thing he promised never to do. I mean, listen to the crowd. It's so perfectly laid out, and we finally get to the match that happened again in late March. So we go from October to the Rumble to Taker not being around for 5, 6, 7 weeks, where he appeared again on March 3rd. So we went from like mid-January through early March, where he didn't appear. And then he has a few weeks to build with Kane, and they have their match at the end of March of 1998. Man, imagine that, right? Like, you go from October to end of March. That's, like, what, 5 months? And they can't even do that now. But that's what this was a great story. And we're going to get to the actual match here because that's what the title of the show is. But I wanted to give you the build because I think the build is just as important to know about why the match happened. Not just that it happened. Not just the moves and the crowd reaction, but also the reason. Because that's the ultimate factor in depending on whether or not people have emotional connection to a story. Why are they fighting? Why should I care? And that's exactly what we got here, was a great story. So let's get to the match that ended up being, again, it wasn't a five-star classic per se, but the story overrode any limitations that these two had being such big men. And it's, you know, you don't always have to have a five-star match to have a money-making match, a money-drawing match. And that's exactly what we had here. A lot of what we had in the 90s was not five-star matches, but money-drawing matches and characters because they were so deep and they had a great roster and the promos were good. The writing was good. You know, that's why people today of today's product that only know today's product look at the physical part only and they take away the most important element, and that's the character development. It's the why they're fighting. It's the story arcs that barely exist. That's what makes money. Not necessarily the physical moves. Those to me are extremely superficial. It's not deep enough for me to care about if it's just about the physical reversals and splashes and all that silly stuff. Basically gymnastics, as MJF would have put it. So, okay, let's get to a little bit of audio from the match. And it wasn't a blockbuster match from a physical perspective, but it didn't need to be. It's about the story. You want to know who wins and loses. You want to see the heel get his ass kicked and the babyface survive and thrive. And you know, you want to be able to live vicariously through that babyface to feel the victory, right? That's the purpose. That's the purpose of really any good versus bad guy plot, which is essentially 95% of any movie or book or TV show. It's good versus evil. Always has been. The underlying backstory is always going to be that more often than not. So let's listen to a little bit of audio from this match, and then we'll talk about it. Alright, so I'll pause it right there. And I did kind of go a little bit towards the end of the match, but throughout the entire match, it was a physical match. Two big men, you expect a slow pace. I'm a big fan of a slow pace, actually. I have the patience for it. I can digest what's happening. I don't need to think 100 miles a minute, and I can understand what moves mean what, and that moves have consequences, and you can actually sell the moves instead of just registering them and moving to the next one, to the next one, to the next one, to the next one. You actually make a story from your moves and the holds, rather than just kind of making it a, just looking at it as, well, you just got to do this, 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 I'm going to get all my stuff in and do this, 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 this. There's reasons behind every, there should be reasons behind everything you do in the ring. And today's product is simply not like that, but I mean, that's, it is what it is today. And we finally get to the finish here, and Kane barely kicked. He almost twitched out of that tombstone, which, by the way, was pretty botched by The Undertaker. I don't think Undertaker has ever had to tombstone somebody that heavy. You could see him kind of slipping out of the arms of Undertaker, and Kane was such a big dude at that time, and still is. But at that time, again, I don't think Taker had a lot of experience tombstoning men that heavy. And he ended up kind of tombstoning him literally on the side of his head / shoulder. I mean, go look at it. It's crazy. It's scary crazy. But it was also a time when finishing maneuvers did just that. They finished the match more often than not. And you see here the surprise and the shock in fans' voices and in Jim Ross's voice. The shock and surprise. Wait, what? Nobody's ever kicked out. That's the effect you want when someone kicks out. If that happened today at WrestleMania, no less, you would automatically think oh, well, it's WrestleMania. They're kicking out of at least one tombstone. I don't want to think that. And I remember looking at that going, oh my God, wait, nobody's ever kicked out of the tombstone. Kane just kicked out of it. Right? That is drama. That's a story. That's how you create a first of all, finisher that means something. And secondly, a very important point in the story of just how powerful Kane is, that he kicked out of a finish that no one's ever kicked out of. So let's hear what happens next in this match. God, I forgot how good Paul Bearer is. I forgot how good he is. I could do a whole show on Paul Bearer. Maybe I will. He's just, oh God. I mean, some of the things that he's done for Taker and Kane is something. It's really, I think, overlooked at times. Such a one of the best managers of all time. All time. But I would say now looking at this in a more keen eye than I did when I, obviously first watched this when I was, oh good God, 13 years old at seventh grade, maybe had my first kiss by then. There's a story you don't want to know. But Kane kicked out again. Again, it wasn't even a kick out. It was less of a twitch. He twitched out. And you could argue his shoulders were still on the mat. He twitched, but he didn't raise his shoulders off the mat, which is essentially how you win the match. So I would actually, if I was doing this podcast back then, this match happened, and I have 35-year-old brain, I would say, no. I would actually have been really annoyed by that, but understood the premise for it, ultimately. And also the fact that Kane gets up way too quick. And there's a little bit of a lack of selling in this match, and a bit too quick of transition from finish to finish. I don't think there's enough of a time in between the finishers here to really absorb what's happening, at least for my taste. I'm not really complaining. I'm just from a podcaster perspective, I guess, is now how I look at things a little bit differently through that lens. But Kane kicks out again from the tombstone. That's absolutely unheard of. And then we finally get the finish of the match here, which... let's take a listen.
Look at the Undertaker. He's in shock. No, this would be the third tombstone. Yes, he got it. And will this be enough? My God, what will it take if it's not? Yes, the Undertaker has won this match. The Undertaker has defeated Kane, and Paul Bearer has got a steel chair. Liberties on a fatigued and a hurt Undertaker. Paul Bearer is trying to finish the job that Kane didn't quite get done. Kane having trouble getting to his feet as well. Oh, look out, Paul!
You gotta get it.
Uh-oh, Undertaker's up. And Paul Bearer is down. And the Undertaker, so fatigued, falling right back down.
He struck Paul Bearer! I can't believe it!
Kane now is back up. Uh-oh. Come on. Oh! Chair right to the spine by Kane on the Undertaker. He tried to drive him right down the hill.
All right, so that's the conclusion of the match. It was really... so Kane gets tombstone three times. He nearly kicks out a third time. Now, this is something really small, but I think it's super important to take a look at, because in today's environment, in today's product, how often do you see when a three count happens, somebody kick out at 3.5? Almost never. It's always, it's all or nothing, right? Like they kick out at one, kick out at two, or don't kick out at all. So that what Kane did here was kicked out at actually a 3.25. I mean, he kicked out just after the three the hand hit the mat for the third time. And that's so important to me because it's, yeah, Kane was beat, but he almost kicked out a third time. Go watch. I know it's a small thing, but in today's product, in today's environment, I think even something like that can be implemented where somebody kicks out just after the three count. And yes, it's registered as the three count. It's not as if it's disputed and the referee missed the call. It's just that that competitor almost did it. Yeah, they were defeated, but a fraction of a second is what the difference was. I think it's a good message to send. It's something that should be done occasionally, not all the time at all, and that's not what I'm advocating. But once in a while, when the program dictates, when the match is big enough, why not? Have somebody kick out at 3 1/4. I think it's, you know, definitely something, small thing, but important. And it also, here, when you heard Undertaker get attacked by Kane at the end of the match, I think it happened too quickly. I think, again, the transition tier between tombstones were kind of weird. There wasn't a whole lot of time to sit back and take it in and go, oh my God, it was just kind of like boom, boom, boom. And also at the end of the match, we had The Undertaker not really get a whole lot of time for celebration. And Paul Bearer came in and ended up attacking Taker. Kane gets up. Paul Bearer gets a punch in the face. And then we have the whole, this is message from WWE that this is a program we're going to extend. And they actually had a Inferno match. I believe that's what it was. I believe the Inferno match was next. And then, yes, they would eventually become the Brothers of Destruction and certainly went on an absolute tear. I mean, that can be another topic we cover too. But next week will also be a wrestling nostalgia week where we cover The Undertaker. It will be a complete Undertaker takeover for Survivor Series, and really in lieu and in celebration of Survivor Series for The Undertaker. So if you have moments, matches that you'd like me to cover with The Undertaker, send them my way at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. I'm interested to hear what you want me to talk about with The Undertaker. Again, until Survivor Series passes, we'll be covering The Undertaker. So maybe the final show in November, we'll do some other topic. But I think it's fitting that we also follow with WWE's doing their 30 Days of the Dead Man, that we also kind of follow suit with the nostalgia, because there's certainly enough content that we could do an entire year of shows and still have a bunch to talk about with Taker. I mean, there's just so much. So, all right, well, that is it for me. Again, guys, a jam-packed week. We got like 5 more shows coming to you this week. So much content coming to you. Hopefully, you get a chance to listen to some of it, all of it, in between your stresses of the election, if you care about such things. Maybe you don't, but I would think that there is quite a few people out there that are a little bit stressed, and hopefully we can take you out of it with the audio that we play and with the topics we talk about. It's time to play in the sandbox on this show, as I always say. But okay, tomorrow again, look for NXT and look for my mailbag segment where I answer your voicemails. So until then, I'll talk to you next time.